Thank you. And actually, with that comment, I'm going to take a few minutes just to broaden the discussion to ask the audience if there are other comments either about the panel, the wonderful panel that we just heard from, just truly amazing research with tremendous local, national, and global implications. But in addition to asking questions about that, we would welcome at this time any general questions or take a few minutes for, as we did before, suggestions about things that could enhance this type of research going forward here on our campus.
Okay. I mean, given the theme of this opening workshop, understanding and protecting the planet, there's an action component in that, protecting the planet. And so I'm just curious, it's a question about vocabulary. If we're trying to become an engaged university and join basic understanding and an action like protection, what language do we use? What kind of vocabulary? Is this about sustainability science? Is this about resilience, adaptation, mitigation? What language do we use as we try to present ourselves to the public, for instance, on what we're trying to accomplish here?
Yeah. Well, yeah, so that's a very important point. I think the biggest mistake, one of the biggest mistakes I see, you know, just in observation, right, is that as scientists, we always attempt to use very precise language, and we always attempt to define various shades of gray. And clearly the media no longer accepts that as a viable point of discussion, right? So I have to say, some people accuse me now, you know, of being a little blunt and, you know, simplifying things. But I think that's actually our obligation as scientists, not to get down and, you know, get in the dirt with these people necessarily. But I think that it's easy for all of us to kind of go a little farther out on a limb than we have in the past and maybe make a little more bold statements, right? I see people apologize all the time when they start, you know, they'll say, well, climate change, if it's real, right? Or, you know, if we could, and I think, you know, it's sort of in our court to have the cojones to stand up and say, look, climate change is real and we're all going to be screwed by this at some point if we don't get our butts in gear and start doing something. And so I have personally taken that on. I mean, I have tenure and I have some pretty big grants, so maybe I'm okay to do that more. But I actually think as scientists, we've sort of been a little bit, you know, shrinking violets on this. And maybe we should just all stand up and, you know, maybe be willing to take one on the chin from a couple of people who disagree with us and fight back a little bit. Sorry that I said that.
Yes, I agree with Steve. I think we need to design some kind of public image of UCSD's, you know, attitude towards climate change and sustainability. And I think today's workshop, actually, for the very first time, I'm kind of, you know, sitting next to the panel with economists and people from biochemistry or Scripps, and I think to me, you know, I just got my tenure, so yeah, I think this kind of opportunity definitely is encouraging. I have many opportunities when I was a graduate student back in MIT, very close connections with, you know, business school and entrepreneurship. And I think UCSD definitely have its own flavor. I see today's workshop, learned a lot from people from SIO and chemistry and some wonderful graduate students. And I think hopefully we can have a few action items after today's workshop, you know, things like put some language together to show UCSD's position for climate change and sustainability research.
Excellent. John?
I had a question, or not a question, but just an observation on another area that's broad and covers more. It covers all the discussion we had today. That's the issue of cross-disciplinary research, or research between the Scripps Medical School and the general campus, is the reward system. That's a challenge. I've been here 40 years, and I've seen this thing actually work once, where we split faculty positions between the institution and the general campus, and the faculty reward system really needs to be considered in this, I believe, and cluster hires rather than split hires may be the right approach to doing the interdisciplinary work. And the other is the reward system with regard to things like research space and so on. And the reason there's a difference here is that the general campus is, well, a general campus. It's providing or attempting to provide a liberal education to young people coming in just to have an undergraduate degree. Less so for Scripps, but the return, let's say, in terms of space and facilities and so on, is also a difference that depends upon where you come from or how you split your time inside the institution. So those are difficult problems, but they're at the core of greater integration of the campus. So that's not a question.
Well, appreciate your comments, even though that wasn't really a question. I think it's an important observation about things that we need to attend to as a campus to be able to move our work forward, regardless of the context in which that work occurs. Thank you.
Hi. So, and if I can just piggyback on the other end of that, something that didn't come up a lot here is incentives for graduate research. For myself and my colleagues here, we have our own sort of self-starting thing that was started by IGERT, but then this year has become something a little bit different with more upper campus. The what led us to this point, though, was that we are all interested in environmental change and trying to make a difference, but we don't have natural starting points for that sort of education here. So for myself, I'm a political scientist. I spent 2 years in the core program there, another year writing a prospectus. So by my third year, I finally had a project, right? And at that point, then I have to go, and if I want to do interdisciplinary work, I need to assess the other disciplines and be at the cutting edge of those disciplines as well, right? The big fear for graduate students is that if you spread out, you lose your expertise, you lose your specialization, and then the logic of your career takes over there, right? We need to do smaller and smaller things a lot of the time, the way that the incentives are set up right now. So for us, we actually have been doing this on our own. I have a series of disciplinary hoops that I need to go to for my own department. My colleagues have the same thing at Scripps. What I'm wondering is, how can faculty, along with the institution, how can we incentivize a real cutting-edge cross-disciplinary research that doesn't destroy our time, right? Because we have other things, unfortunately, that we have to do, but we want to be successful at this thing more than those other things a lot of the time. The logic isn't there yet. I'm wondering what kind of solutions we might have for incoming graduate students, especially who are starting this sort of training.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about generating new methods, structures, and opportunities or mechanisms for graduate students to be able to do this multidisciplinary research.
Right.
Very good. Very good. Shirley, were you going to say something?
Yeah, I thought the initiative did start, like put on my slides, change is hard to come. I think it come at a slower pace. But recent 2 years, this interdisciplinary, Chancellor's Interdisciplinary Award, were, I think this year is open for competition. Actually, I won one of them, and with Oleg Shipriko in physics and Seth Cohen in chemistry. And we really just had seed money to put 3 graduate students together and cross-training between physics, chemistry, and engineering. So I think we need that kind of incentive from the campus, and through that you go and go after larger grants that can sustain those students. So I see a lot of places on campus this is studying, but probably you won't benefit from it. Sorry.
I do want to mention that this is not the first time that the issue about education has arisen in the context of research, and we really understand those things to go hand in hand, and that the training programs that we have and the way that students have the opportunity to learn and to grow as professionals here needs to be married with the research objectives that we have, as well as our core values at UC San Diego. And one of those core values is this cross-disciplinary integrated approach to research. So I know, for example, that there is a major effort going on campus that's part of the strategic planning process to take a look at these kinds of issues in the curriculum. And I see Suresh in the back. I'm sure he could talk about this at great length. But really looking across disciplines, where do we have opportunities to be teaching together, to integrate classes, to have classes from one area count for another area? That is a very arduous process in a large bureaucracy like we are. But I do have to say that UC San Diego has not shied away from beginning to address that. And I think that that's one of the values of the strategic planning process over the course of the last year. Again, not all those changes are going to be made by the time that you graduate, but it's very clear we need to make those changes at the undergraduate level, at the graduate level, and create an array of opportunities for our graduate students and our postdocs to work across disciplines together.
I would just like to make one quick comment to elaborate on what Kyle was saying. I'm also a part of this wonderful interdisciplinary forum. And really, as graduate students, we're apprentices. And so the roadmap to becoming a straight scientist is much more clearly laid out for us than to be an interdisciplinary scientist. And I think that some of the examples of really great faculty-led interdisciplinary work has been really clear today in this forum. And so I encourage those faculty members to come and maybe present at our forum and actually allow for graduate students to take part in this research and learn from you how to actually have a good interdisciplinary project, because it's really hard to make it from scratch. We still need to learn too.
Sounds like a wonderful invitation. Margaret?
I think the question that the issue that the students raised about how best to conduct their careers in this framework is an important one. But just as we would never think of doing research without looking at what the rest of the world does, I think it's important for us to look outside of UCSD as well. Mm-hmm. And for example, when NSF began the IGERT program and the research collaboration networks and the a whole host of the interdisciplinary initiatives at the beginning of the 2000s, they also invested in very substantial research into what was happening in those, both from the standpoint of how the interdisciplinary work was done, how that was valued in the world of scholarship, and the impact on students. And I think that we need to inform ourselves about some of that work and take advantage of it and learn from what's been good and what has not been good at other institutions as well.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful point. Wonderful point. And just as an aside, NIH is doing the same thing now, just a decade after NSF. So I think there are important lessons learned that UCSD will be able to take advantage of. Yes. We'll have time for another question, and I'd like to engage. But I do also want to mention that we said at the very beginning that this is the launch of a discussion. And so one of the things that we'll be doing is to take a look at some of the issues that were raised, recommendations that were raised, and try to generate sort of the next steps, next stages, create new opportunities to continue this process and refine it within our university. And one way to help with that is to put any ideas that you have. We'll put a summary of this on the website. In addition to having the videotape available for everyone to watch, for anyone who wasn't here or you want to re-listen to some of the presentations from today, but that is a great place to put additional comments and suggestions and requests and ideas on the website so that everyone can see those. And we will begin to look for the common patterns, the common issues, the common requests, because there certainly have been themes that have arisen already. We have another question before we close.
So we build cutting-edge facilities here, and we try and achieve high energy efficiency, Title 24, exceeding that by 20% in our state mandate. What my mechanical engineers, the guys that are trying to design these systems, are finding is that we're going to start building buildings that achieve massive energy efficiencies that nobody's going to want to be in because they're going to be uninhabitable. Okay? And their choices either fall to state mandate and exceed the energy efficiencies or make a building that people want to be in. So, I mean, this is probably more the human side of this, but...
Right now, there's actually work by some economists at UC Berkeley which show at least a sort of the current LEED sort of gold standard that you actually increase the rental values of big office buildings. I don't know what happens when you push it a long way past that and seal people in buildings and whatever. There's clearly you can go in some sense probably too far.
Here is the opportunity for you, right? DOE had a building efficiency hub and got cut. The funding got cut by the Congress after 2 years evaluations because apparently they didn't really achieve. You know, it have to be habitable environment and it has to have really good building efficiency. So I think it's a great opportunity for you to work with some of the people here and think about how can you convince DOE to reestablish the energy hub for building efficiency, which will include the human part of the design. Because I don't really believe that you cannot design something that is comfortable for humans. But you look at the Tesla, Apple computers, you know, they are, when they design those engineering pieces, they definitely considered the human comfort. And yeah, I think just traditionally, maybe, you know, the boundary has not been pushed enough that you have to consider the human comfort. And, you know, I think it's an opportunity that you can rethink about how building is designed.
I think we could continue this discussion for a long time. I know there are some additional hands and that are up, and I'll certainly wait. I want to give Kit an opportunity to close the session, and I want to personally thank you all for your involvement, especially the panelists, the moderators that we've had today, and for all of you being here. Thank you.